Hi, I'm Samantha, a past guest on CJAM's Handy Link. You're listening to Handy Link on CJAM 99.1 FM, reaching high ground in Windsor, Detroit.
Welcome to Handy Link, sponsored by the Italian Canadian Handy Capable Association. I'm your host, Cam Wells. Show, we'll hear from Nicole Daigneault about the latest on her yoga program. So you were telling me that you had a recent success moment involving one of your special needs yoga students.
Yes, I did. I want to preface by saying every class is so fun and so special. Everybody succeeds and gets such great benefits from every class, but there's those moments where you're just tingling because it's just so wonderful to see some of the responses. And yes, there was a really nice moment. I had my usual class at Harmony in Action. That's every Thursday at 10, and the attendees are adults with a variety of special needs, including cerebral palsy, Down syndrome, autism, deafness. There's all it's such a spectrum of amazing people in the class. Some are in their wheelchairs, some are out of their wheelchairs and down on mats with support, and others are a little bit more able-bodied and are either doing seated or standing practice. So yesterday I had my usual crew, such a fun group, and one girl who has participated before months ago, maybe even a year ago, she came to one or two classes, and then I didn't see her again. But yesterday she was there and participated. And I recall her having a really good time when she joined previously. But yesterday, the smile did not leave her face. And it just, everybody in the group seemed elevated by it. I was just so happy to see her. And I also loved seeing when the assistants, the caregivers, the PSWs, when they have a change of heart or mind, you know, when they come into something thinking, she won't be able to do this, they don't understand that, you know, they kind of look at me sometimes like, what are you expecting? But then I see them see that the person is getting it and benefiting from it, even if it's just a very small vocalization or that smile on the face or a movement that the PSW wasn't expecting could be made. Just, you know, that excitement of seeing everybody so elevated by this woman's enjoyment of it. And she, you know, it's a physical class. She's in a chair. She can't do a whole lot, but in terms of physicality, but what she can do is very beneficial to her. And we also did a lot of the chanting and vocalization and getting the throat and face kind of cleared and tingling. And it was just a beautiful whole scene to hear everybody's voices and to know that, you know, just everybody really got so up from the experience. Physically, you know, she was up a little higher in her wheelchair. And if that's all anybody can do, if the hour is spent with a little bit less slumping down, a little bit more, you know, where there's a bit of a twist in the neck, you know, I get her to gaze over her shoulder to me to the right and gaze over to the shoulder. The movements are so minimal, and that's why I think the PSWs don't really often think it's beneficial. But, you know, just a simple twist of the neck for someone who's been twisting or tipping her neck the other way all day, to get that neck up straight and turning a different direction is a huge thing. And it's those moments or a hand that slightly opens up that's been so tightly contracted, you know, just those moments and the humming and the sounds that are coming out of the throat. It's just so beautiful to be witness to that and to be part of that. And when I see those changes in the PSW's responses, it's awesome. It's really, really an awesome thing to experience.
When it comes to something like yoga, really is mind over matter. But the fact is, if a person's stress is reduced by the practice, that can have significant physical impact. Can really,
even if the majority of the time is spent just breathing, just focusing, you know, getting out of the head, getting into the breath, being a little bit more present in the moment, as you said, those are the stress reducers, because it's when our head is somewhere else, you know, not to mention the physical pain, but that causes stress, but the anguish of, you know, being so all over the place in our heads, and just to, you know that she's with me with the breath, know that he's participating with the chanting. You're present with me, you know, and that is so stress reducing. You're absolutely right. The physical stuff is excellent as well, but it's the breath, the mindfulness, you know, they're engaging with me with their eyes, they're following my directions, and I know that presence and that fun is there, which, yes, reduces the stress, and it's reducing the stress of the whole community, the caregiver, the parent, the aide at the center, whoever it is that's in care. The stress is so low because they're giggling and having fun, and it's such an excellent, excellent gift for everybody.
So you mentioned you might have some additional work coming up in the fall. Can you tell me a little bit about that?
Well, I can't tell you any specifics. What I can tell you, because the things are getting just sort of talked about and worked about, and as you know, and your listeners, if they've been kind of following this for the last 5 years since I've been doing the modified practice, it's just been slow and steady. Word of mouth, different conferences, different people hearing about it, you know, that kind of thing, it's been at its own nice pace. So whatever I'm talking about now, it's all unfolding at its own nice pace, but the excitement is there. It's there with all my current classes, the classes at the Jackson Park Health Center, the class at Harmony, the session I just finished at the John McGivney Center. They've let me know this fall they'll have me back again. So all those nice things that I've been doing the last number of years are continuing, which is great. And there's also such great, like a little buzz at the university, which has been there, and it's just growing in momentum, just a real desire to get more accessible yoga into the awareness and availability to those on campus and also all community. My classes at the university are not limited to university students in general, but I can't tell you exactly how it'll look or what it'll be, but all I can tell you is there's a really nice undercurrent of awareness. You know, I've spoken at two conferences recently at the university, both of which just led to further interest, further dialogue about developing more and more modified yoga for those who don't think they can do yoga, you know, any kind of modification. And it doesn't mean, physical disabilities, intellectual disabilities. You know, maybe you've had a heart attack or a stroke and you want to really learn some modified techniques where you can sit down and do yoga, or there is more of a focus on, breath and subtle movements that are so, so healing and beneficial. And, in my own practice, my 20-year practice has been quite physical. I've really physically challenged my body, the scoliosis, the leg length discrepancy, the sciatica. I've physically challenged those parts of me. And but when I look over those 20 years, it's the subtler practices. It's the chanting and creating vibration in my throat. It's creating those deeper breaths, the diaphragm. It's some of the relaxation techniques, the different meditation techniques, the visualizations. It's those subtle practices and restorative yoga, with pillows and all that, that have really been the deepest part of my healing. And although it takes, patience and willingness to really slow down, I do hope that everybody, able-bodied or disabled, gives themselves the gift of restorative yoga, relaxation therapy, meditation, breath awareness. That is where the magic lies, no question. And I heard someone, I don't remember what I was listening to on the radio the other day, but someone said the words, if you have lungs, you can do this. Everybody has lungs, right? They were talking about something else. But in regards to breath awareness and breathing practices, everybody has lungs. So no matter what the level of ability, that breath work, I have a few techniques that really help that diaphragm start to move, and I really do see quite quickly the increased rise in the rib cage. It's amazing how receptive the body is to correcting poor breathing, to deepening shallow breath. The body wants to breathe. Most of us are starving for oxygen. And when we start to try these techniques and get those lungs working, it is the healing is immediate because you're bringing oxygen to your body. Most of us are in a lot of pain because we don't have enough oxygen in our body. So, if any of the listeners out there are in any pain right now, just tell them to take great, big, huge, deep breaths. And that's step one to the healing. Then take 10 more of them, right? Every hour, take 10 deep breaths and you're bringing oxygen to your body. You're helping your body to flush out its toxins. You're helping it to work better. So, and most of us are really short, shallow breathers, taking rapid breaths. We're stressed out. We're holding our breath. It's, a deep breath does wonders. So everyone can breathe. So everyone can do that.
I'd like to thank you for taking the time out to do this, but if you can stay on the line for a sec, that'd be great.
Absolutely, Kim. Thank you. And it's www.cocoyoga.ca if people do want to follow up and see what classes might be canceled and what's coming up, because summer vacation, I might have a few cancellations. So thank you again, Cam.
Of course. HandyLink will be right back after these commercial messages, so stay tuned.
Have you ever thought about volunteering with CJAM FM? Why haven't you? Volunteering isn't limited to students. Anyone from the community can come into the station and start their very own program. All you need are a pair of headphones and the enthusiasm to learn. So get involved right here in your community with a topical spoken word show or music program where you choose the content. Email programcjam@gmail.com or come on down to the station. We're located on the University of Windsor campus in the basement of the CAW Student Center. Find out more information about how you can volunteer at cjam.ca.
Welcome back to HandyLink, sponsored by the Italian-Canadian Handy Capable Association. I'm your host, Cam Wells. Earlier in our show, we heard from Nicole Daigneault. In this segment of our show, we'll hear from Rebecca Blavut from Tactile Vision. So tell me a little bit about the nature of your vision impairment.
I'm totally blind, blind from birth, retinopathy of prematurity.
So how has this affected you as you've gone through your life?
Well, I mean, obviously there's accessibility challenges, societal barriers, the fact that, you know, walking spaces apart from some downtown areas in some cities are not really adapted for pedestrians, let alone vision-impaired pedestrians. That includes audible traffic lights, that includes tactile crossing indicators, you know, the fact that the sort of volume-actuated traffic. So that's a huge thing. I think travel is a big talking announcements on buses. The fact that in airports, if you're totally blind, you're sometimes sort of relegated to a special assistance area. You know, there's lots and lots of ways that being totally blind is different than having some vision, because on a train, for example, the conductor can say, wait until everybody leaves the train and I'll help you. And I'm like, are you kidding? I'm not. You know, I can, you know, navigate off of a train perfectly fine by myself, but it's assumed that if you're totally blind, you know, you're somehow you're not capable of doing those things, and you're more inconvenienced. You know, if you're making a connecting train, you can't afford to wait. So yeah, there's lots and lots of ways. Traveling and access to information, I think, are the two biggest.
So there was a recent incident involving the passport office. Can you tell me a little bit about that?
Speaking of access to information, yeah, Passport Canada, apparently, I didn't know this, has a policy that their staff are not allowed to physically write a passport form for you if you have a perceptual disability, I think they call it now. So they can show you where to write. They can tell you to take the form home and have somebody else fill it out for you, but they cannot physically write it for you. And there's an awful lot of vision-impaired people who don't have good handwriting skills. I don't have bad handwriting skills, but I don't think my handwriting is always as legible as a sighted person's is. And the fact is, the passport people are going to turn and input all that information into a computer anyway. So yes, I had a recent incident where I wanted them to help me write by writing the information on the paper for me, and they wouldn't do it, so I had to write it myself, and it took an awfully long time.
So what were your thoughts at the time this was happening?
Well, I mean, on a certain level, I'm up for a challenge, right? So I was going to show them that how ridiculous their rules were by actually complying with them. And it really did tie up a lot of time. I mean, the person had to put a signature guide on every single line for me to fill every single checkbox, every single line. And it just took a long time. It was very disruptive for everybody. It would have been so much faster if they'd just written it for me. My thoughts were two things. One was I felt kind of undignified doing that. It would have been just more discreet and more efficient if they'd just done it. Given me the choice, maybe, given me the choice, right? It's always important to have choices. But, you know, I felt undignified, and I felt foolish. And that, to me, is not a response to the AODA legislation.
So if you could send any message to the community about equality for those with blindness or vision impairments, what would you say?
Well, I'd say it's important to give people choices, for heaven's sake. Listen to your clients. Don't assume that the policymakers who may or may not have consulted with anybody with a disability know best. Give people choices. Have some common sense. I would say don't limit the choices to what you think you'd be capable of if you had a vision impairment. Well, I couldn't imagine walking 10 feet to the I don't know, I can't, and it could be anything. I can't imagine having the strength to push a door open. I'm going to push the button for that person. I mean, it could be anything. Just give people choices.
Do you find that there's enough Braille accessibility in media and publications these days?
Enough Braille accessibility?
Yes.
I wouldn't say so. I don't think that Braille is necessarily the only medium that anything should be available in. There's plenty of, you know, sort of web access now and apps and things, but with a number of things people actually use print for, you know, printed pieces of paper. I think if we could apply some of that to giving people material in Braille, everybody likes to have a document in their hands to read and peruse, and reference documents, policies, statements. I think all of this should be menus. I shouldn't have to resort to my phone or taking a picture of it and reading it later. I should be able to have access to materials that print reading people have all the time.
So if you could see anything added to the community in terms of access and equality,
mm-hmm.
what would it be?
Well, that's a really challenging one, because what people in the community need is a way of accessing services for producing materials in alternative formats, and I don't think people know where to go necessarily. So there's an awful lot of companies and organizations that produce print, and there's a mandate now with the ODA that they have to have it in alternate formats, but people don't know where to go.
And there's also the question of enforcement of that. It's easy to slip through and say
yes. Yeah. I don't even know how, you know, the Ontario government seems to be resistant to putting any sort of teeth into the AODA, and that is the only way they're going to achieve any kind of accessibility.
According to the World Blind Union, who was on the show recently, only 10% of materials in terms of literature are available in an alternate form in this country. Any thoughts on this?
Well, I believe it. I'd be surprised if it's that high.
I personally found it quite ridiculous. The fact is, it's basically saying your right to access is only 10% of what mine is, and that can't stand.
No, you're quite right. But I mean, we can apply this. What's the number of accessible buildings to wheelchair? Truly accessible buildings to people in a wheelchair? Do we know?
Incredibly low.
Yeah. Or services for people with a hearing impairment, for example, sign language interpretation, or I think it's low across the board somehow. I mean, lots of places have an accessible ramp. Maybe they even have an electronic door opener for their company. But I would think disability is still very much at the very bottom end of minorities, which are still minorities.
I'd like to thank you for taking the time out to do this, but if you can stay on the line for a sec, that'd be great.
Sure.
How can it be, my friends, that we live one of the greatest countries in the world, that we have all these high ideals of accessibility and equality, and even policies by government mandate that are supposed to be being enforced to make things on a level playing field? How can it be that we still have so many cracks through which it is so easy to slip? For one ill-informed employee or one prejudiced person just to look with disdain or not understand or to not respect that a person with a disability is a person capable, strong, and intelligent. That's unacceptable, folks. Fact is, it's all about education. It is all about building that bridge of understanding. And how is it that we have all these wonderful policies and we're still not sitting people down and saying, disability is natural. It is part of the human experience for many of us. Just accept it. Assume a person knows their own capabilities and their own needs until proven otherwise. If you don't know what a person can or cannot do, it is not your place to tell them. It is not your right to say that we're going to make this 10 times more inconvenient simply because you move a little differently, or hear a little differently, or see a little differently. That's not okay, folks. Especially people in the service industry. Sit them down, educate them, create a policy, and make sure it's adhered to. Make sure people understand that you can ask the question. You can say, do you need this or that support? But it is not acceptable to say, you need this. If you do, you're belittling the person and disrespecting their right to succeed or to fail. And you're saying, you can't accomplish on your own. Therefore, we're going to make this a matter of simply over-supporting you. I've always said it's scaffolding. It's a matter of giving them the help and support they need, but not regarding them as invalids, and not making the process more difficult. Passport office, government agency. You would think that of all agencies, of all people, they would be the most likely to understand. They have some great practices and services, and some great works on the horizon, that's very true. But the individuals working in these offices have an obligation to learn all they can about disabilities. Because not everybody's going to walk in there with the same ability to see or to hear as somebody else might have. And you have to know how to handle each individual case. It is not a one-size-fits-all. Never has been. Disability is about the human interpretation. It is about the set of circumstances established by a medical baseline and how the individual responds to it, how they find the strength or don't to rise to the occasion. Now, Rebecca, she was simply asking for equal consideration. She was not saying, I want this to be an unfair advantage. She was not saying, I want to skip the line because there's something unique about me. No. She was saying, I want this to be done the right way, the fair way. And that is not an unreasonable request for any human being to make. But the tragedy is, not everyone with a disability or as part of any minority group knows they have the right to equal access. Learn your rights. Ask questions. Don't turn into one of those people who assumes, based on one condition, that you're entitled. We have too many entitled people out there already, folks, expecting the world owes them an education, owes them a job, owes them this, owes them that. For a person with a disability who asks for equality and fair access, that's one thing. But saying, my disability is the world's greatest curse, gimme, 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 and milking it for all it's worth. I've seen that before, folks. And on a personal note, that really bothers me. Asking for equality and acceptance by society is fair. Asking for some supports, that is not unreasonable. Things like ODSP, they are a necessity for a person with a disability who might not be able to work as much. But you can't blame your condition for everything. You can't make it the insurmountable mountain. It doesn't have to be that way. You take time, you ask questions, you know your rights, and you assert them when you have to. That's what it's all about. Equality. This has been HandyLink. I'm your host, Cam Wells, reminding you, we're all equal, So get on out there and have yourselves a good one. You've earned it, folks. We'll see you next week.